Back in on Canuck Central, we're in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? Canuck Central is for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. And JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca. And our next guest, he joins us every single Monday here on Canucks Central. And when he joins us, he is brought to you by Besant Motors. It is Don Taylor. What's happening, Donnie?
Back to work today and looking forward to the playoffs. And our show today focused on whether or not there's a playoff buzz in Vancouver. And Dhaliwal and Henderson both felt there's no buzz at all in Vancouver. And I disagreed with them.
What? So not enough car flags around? What's going on? Like, how do you measure the buzz? Like, there's no thermostat or something like this to measure the buzz.
That's how they measure the buzz, by the car flag.
Oh, yes.
And I don't remember, like, before 2011 started. I don't know if car flags were even a thing in 94, certainly not in 82. But I don't remember them being, like, on cars before the playoffs started in 2011. Like, if they go on, if they win a couple of games, and, you know, right off the bat, I guess Nashville or whomever around, the car flags are going to be there. I just feel it. I was out Saturday night. Everyone was talking about the Canucks and various things. But yeah, there's some people are jacked. Come on.
No, I think people are excited, but also the car flag thing. I thought it was actually a lot bigger during the West Coast Express era. I mean, maybe it's just my own anecdotal experience, but I remember back in the day in the early 2000s, I would see car flags, like tons of car flags, and it wasn't quite as much in 2011, 2010. I think it kind of didn't catch on the same way. And since then, of course, I don't know if we can measure it with car flags. I think the car flag era was at its hottest during the West Coast Express era.
Yeah, the only problem with that was, you know, the car flags in that era would have lasted one round.
They'd lose in round two, Donnie.
That's true. Sorry. They beat St. Louis.
Yes.
But, okay. And I don't mean to rip into the West Coast Express era. We know those guys. A lot of us love those guys. I get all that. I've always said I have respect for that era, because Mark Crawford had them playing really sexy, offensive, and I mean offensive in a good way, hockey, while everybody else was playing the trap. So I do really admire that era. But I'm going to guess, guys, am I right here? Is that where the car flags started? Is that where the car flag trend started? So maybe that's why you might have seen more of them. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. I never had one.
I don't know. I just remember growing up in a small town north of Toronto. Like, anytime a World Cup would come around, all it was Italian flags everywhere,
yeah.
Donnie.
Yeah,
that's it.
No, I grew up in an Italian neighborhood as well. And I remember that well.
I used to have a car flag. And when I went to work in Alberta, in Edson, Alberta, because everybody was an Oilers fan, I put the car flag on my little Honda Civic back in the day. Like the one little Canuck flag amongst all the Edmonton fans.
You know what it is? You probably got to thrift the car flags now, you know, because it's been so long since the Canucks were in the playoffs. A lot of them probably ended up at thrift stores over the years.
Yeah. And actually, you're right. We were looking at car flag prices today. They range from like $9 at Walmart all the way up to about $26 to wherever it was. But there's a wide range of prices. And one thing we realized today is that the cheaper ones only have the logo on one side of the flag, and the more expensive ones have the logo, like a real flag, on both sides. So buyer beware when you're getting your car flag.
How do you only have it on one side?
It's just, I don't know. I'm not really. Well, it's a cost cutting measure. That's good.
Clearly, the Canucks are on the brink of winning the division here, Donnie. It's been an unbelievable season, as we've talked about really since the start of it, in all of our Monday hits with you. And you know, Saturday night, it felt like, yeah, it was a bit of a goalie win, I guess you could say. Casey DeSmith certainly bailed them out in the first period. But once the Canucks found their footing, you started to see again what makes this team as good as they have been for much of this year. And that's how they play defensively. And most of all, I think how, Elias Lindholm added another layer to that and matched up against Leon Draisaitl. And sure, Draisaitl had his chances. He's always going to. The guy's one of the best players in the league. But they kept him at bay for much of the night. And that was what impressed me most about Saturday. And I think gives me some confidence going into the postseason.
It felt like the way the Canucks, the impressive way the Canucks were winning earlier in the season. It felt very playoff-ish. And I thought the best moment of the game for the Canucks, and it was outstanding that Casey DeSmith came through. There's nothing wrong with having a goaltender that comes through, especially in unexpected fashion. You know, also great that Suter, you know, again, unexpected. That's what you're going to get in the playoffs. Goals from bottom six players, Lafferty and Suter, end up scoring. So that's impressive. You know, Joshua scores, although he's had a great year. Maybe you expect that into an empty net. I thought the best moment, though, was near the end of the game, face-off, and Draisaitl faked as though he was going to take a swing at Lindholm. He was frustrated by him. Mm-hmm. And look, I know Kuzmenko is hot right now, scoring goals, picking up points in Calgary. But that moment there and the amount of time Lindholm spent pestering Draisaitl, now maybe that changes if they meet in a series and McDavid's on the ice. But I just thought that moment there was really, really promising for the Canucks, because if you can get under the skin of somebody like Draisaitl, you are doing your job in a million ways. So that moment there was great for two reasons. Number one, it was just something that has to happen in the playoffs for the Canucks. Number two, it was Lindholm. And the value in that, in being able to shut somebody down like Draisaitl, one of the best players in the league, it's just so important. But if you look back at that game, it looked like he wanted to take a shot at Lindholm. I think he kind of scared him too. Mm-hmm. But man, Lindholm really did his job, and that was pretty impressive and really important for the Canucks.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, we haven't seen enough from Lindholm because he's been injured too. And when he got in, there's always kind of that like get to know period with your teammates, which takes some time to get up to speed, and obviously gets injured and everything. And offensively, you want to see more, but to have a guy that can match up, which can also allow Pettersson and JT Miller to perhaps get some more advantageous matchups at times and be put into, you know, more favorable situations, I think that can also be really big in the playoffs. And that's those types of chess moves you need to be able to make if you want to make a run and get through some of these top teams that they end up facing.
Well, I think, you know, because of the injury, I don't think a lot of us really know Elias Lindholm. Really, you know, I mean, people who are big Carolina or Calgary fans might know. We don't really know much about him. But if he's one of these players, and the one guy that really sticks out for me, and let me get back to that in a second, but if he's one of these players who really enjoys that, really enjoys shutting down one of the opponent's best players or their best player, that is just so valuable and frustrates them. And the one player that always sticks out, well, there's a lot of them. Claude Lemieux is obviously one of them. But do you remember when Tikkanen was frustrating his buddy Gretzky? Not the first time the Oilers played the Kings. The Kings beat them in 88-89. But the next time around, Tikkanen did an unbelievably great job of frustrating Gretzky and getting under his skin. And I always remember that. And, again, those are guys that you love to hate. But, man, you want them on your team. But if Lindholm, you know, I can't really see – watching him in interviews, I just really can't see him as that type of guy. But if he is, and he looked like it on Saturday, boy, that's really valuable. And if he can get back to piling up some points, so much the better.
Yeah, and you know, they had some chances. They generated a little bit, and anybody who's playing with Joshua and Garland eventually get some offense going as well. Thatcher Demko is going to start tomorrow in the penultimate regular season game. They get the Calgary Flames, final game at home. Do you think Demko gets both of these games? What do you want to see from Demko here in these last two?
Well, you know, I'm a real believer in the rhythm of sport and certainly the rhythm of hockey. And he has to get into some. And I know there's time between games. I get that. And you have to take a season game by game. But I think there's such a thing as getting into the rhythm of stopping pucks in the case of a goaltender, of getting hot in the case of a goaltender. And I think he needs that right now. I would anticipate him getting both games, especially if, as rumored, as reported by Elliot Friedman, there's a good chance this series isn't going to start until Tuesday. So if indeed he starts, let's say he didn't start Thursday, Well, that would be a week between games, and going into game one of a playoff series, I don't think you want that. I think you want them to play in Winnipeg, or you know, at the very least, play half the game, or just get some action in Winnipeg. You know, all bets are off when it comes to that last game and what coaches are going to do. But I would think after that long layoff, at the very least, play Tuesday against Calgary, and at least part of the game against Winnipeg. Maybe all of it, but I would think he would want to get into the rhythm of stopping pucks in a National Hockey League game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's going to be interesting for that Thursday game, do you think, let's say the Canucks somehow don't even get a point tomorrow against the Calgary Flames, and that means they would, and Edmonton wins, and Edmonton also wins the other game, and you know, so the Canucks, it ends up being that Thursday, they kind of have to get a result for them to win the division. Is it worth it to play your guys or still give guys rest for that game?
Yeah, if they have to get a point. Look, the risk of, and I know that, you know, the coaches, Rick Tocchet, and hey, Mike Yeo talked the other day. Mm-hmm. The coaches will tell you, the players will tell you that it doesn't really matter. But, you know, if they were to somehow slip to second and get, and they still could if they win the division, but the chances are greater if they slip to second and get in Vegas or the Kings. Like, do you think Dallas is happy right now being matched up against Vegas with Stone coming back and Hurdle? I don't think so. So yeah, I could, you know, that game Thursday could be really, really important.
Yeah, and you know, Canucks probably feel the same way. It's like we worked this hard to get Vegas in the first round, you know, it's not like you're going to throw a game in order to make this happen. And really, it comes down to essentially what Vegas is going to do in these last couple of games, as much as anything else, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, Hurdle got going on the weekend, scoring an important goal. So it frustrates a lot of people, but I don't think anybody wants that big, talented, experienced team. You know, their goaltending might be a question mark, but it's the same two guys that, you know, won them the Stanley Cup last year, in particular Aiden Hill, although they haven't been that great lately. I don't think anybody wants them. And then I think people are afraid of L.A., not because they, you know, can't beat them, because they're worried about their fans falling asleep. So, hey, listen, it's effective, I guess. But I think most people in this town and Canuck Nation would want Nashville for several reasons.
So Pew Suter scored on Saturday night. That was good to see. He's actually, by the numbers, played pretty well with JT Miller and Brock Besser. The only question mark I have about the forward lines as they were constructed, and what, you know, this looks to be how they want to set themselves up for the playoffs, Ilya Mikheyev. He's now got one goal in 49 games. He had a bunch of opportunities on Saturday, His stick would blow up. He'd miss the pass, completely fan on it. Just like every mistake in the book. Are you on the side of, hey, at least he's getting to those areas, or they need to try something other than Ilya Mikheyev with Elias Pettersson?
Well, he believes in him. He likes him. And I think he sees, like, I noticed him more now than I was, say, a month ago. So is that enough, though? I'm not really sure. The bars set pretty low. And, I mean, he had that one chance in front where he did get away a good shot fairly early, and Skinner made the save. But I guess they want to keep, it's clear they want to keep Garland with Joshua, and they want to get Lindholm going. So, and then you've got a guy who's going to be making $11.6 million a year next season. Can he do something about Mikheyev? I have a feeling that, and look, I could be completely wrong here. I have a feeling that just listening to him talk, that Tocchet thinks Mikheyev is going to do something. Hmm. As outrageous as that sounds, that he might do something unexpected. Well, any goal that he's going to get is going to be unexpected. But unexpected in a good way, in the playoffs. I could see that. And, you know, he just needs a break. Like Lafferty's goal, he hasn't exactly lit it up this year. I thought Skinner was way too far to the left.
Yeah.
And it was a big break for him, and he popped it in the net. This is a National Hockey League player. He sees an opening like that. That's something that I think that everybody talks about, a goal off the shin pad or whatever the case may be, or just a big mistake by a goaltender that would help. I thought that was the case there. But Mikheyev has just got nothing. But I think Tocchet thinks there's still something there. as ridiculous as that might sound.
Well, and you know, on the post-game show, we had some fans still be very critical of Elias Pettersson because they felt like he didn't score or do anything. But like, if Mikheyev and even Hoglander had a couple chances, if they convert on a couple, do people feel different about how Pettersson's playing as well? Because they are getting chances and he is creating opportunities for his line mates.
Yeah, I you know, it's just I have to think there's more there with him, and I have noticed him more in a positive way, and I don't. Sat, you're more into the deep stats than me, but I just notice him more, and it just seems like he's more dangerous right now. And again, maybe Tocchet feels that trio could really Hoglander's had a very good season, but they could really break out at maybe unexpectedly at the perfect time of year. He's a very talented player. Mikheyev's fast. I think he believes it's going to be the law of averages, and they're going to bust out. That's what I think Tocchet, believes, just listening to him talk.
So we've gotten here, Donnie. They're almost at 50 wins. It's already the third best regular season in Canucks franchise history, at least by points gained at 107. I still struggle sometimes thinking about how they got here, where we were 12 months ago, and it was, okay, pretty promising under Rick Tocchet, but we saw this under Bruce Boudreau, so we're not sure what to believe. I mean, they've changed everything about the way this team feels, the way they talk in the room after games, after losses, at practice. It just feels like this organization, and it doesn't feel like, I mean, it shows in the standings, they've taken a complete 180 from where they were a year ago.
They have, and with that, though, comes, in typical Vancouver fashion, expectations.
Yeah.
And when the team doesn't blow somebody out, it's like, what's wrong? Or when they lose.
Yes.
And it's just everything dies. You know, the success has come so quickly, and the moaning and bitching and complaining, hey, I'm one of the ones doing it. You know, it's happened really quickly. And
right.
Hey, take a look at the standings. They're not doing that poorly. And yet, you know, people are upset when, you know, things aren't perfect. And, you know, even heard it Saturday night a lot is like, yeah, they beat Edmonton, but David's not there.
Mm-hmm.
So what? You beat Edmonton, but I think it was pretty promising in the way they went about it. You know, this just in, Edmonton has beaten teams and has done very well in the regular season anyway, when McDavid's not there. And the Canucks could always argue, hey, we didn't have one of our best players in Demko as well. But it just, you're right. It just, everybody's head's kind of spinning in town. And I'm not so sure, or in Canuck Nation. I'm not so sure anybody really knows what to expect come the postseason because it's happened so fast. And I think there's also this air of disbelief that things have happened so quickly. And I think people might think they're dreaming. Is this real?
Yeah.
Well, we're about to find out on Tuesday and going forward after that.
Well, this would be the second biggest turnaround in Canucks history.
Wow.
You know, from one year to another. So this is 24 points. I guess it could get up to 28 points. The biggest turnaround was from 73-74 to 74-75, they went from having a 59-point season to 86 points. That was a 27-point turnaround from one season to another. If they win out, this would be the biggest turnaround in Canucks history from one season to another. So something we haven't really seen in what, almost 50 years of this franchise's existence.
Okay. You stop right there. I know, Sat, you want the old man to go back and remember.
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know, right? And talk. I do.
Gary Smith was unbelievable in 75,
yeah,
Donnie.
Hey, now we're talking. Yeah. Well, he was a Hart Trophy candidate, as a matter of fact. And that was at a time when, and I think this was real back then, when it was like nobody's seen the Canucks play, you know, where the bulk of the NHL population was at the time. Like nobody, and he was unbelievable that year, right? 74-75, they make the playoffs, they beat Montreal, you know, in Montreal in game one. It's, oh my God, it was just so, so special, and, you know, out-dueling Chicago for the, you know, for first place in the division. And that was sort of a thing where nobody had seen it before. It was the first time they made the playoffs. It was incredible. That was really, really special. But but back then it was like people weren't as jaded,
right?
Because
yeah.
the team was only 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
But now it's like you have this sense of disbelief because it's just been so long and so many years and disappointment and failure and some success. It's just nobody expected this. I'm not even, like Jim Rutherford said at the beginning of the year, well, we'll make the playoffs if everything goes right. I don't. There's no way those guys thought as much as confident and as cocky as pro athletes and ex-pro athletes and GMs and coaches could be. There's no way they thought they'd win the division. Everything's just happened so quickly. So the feel is, I think, much different than 74, 75 because you've got all this somewhat dark history behind you this time around.
Gordy Locke, before we let you go, Donnie, Gordy Locke tweets in and he says, "Feeling the buzz is when you start talking to Canucks, when you start talking Canucks with random strangers at 7-Eleven in the lineup."
Yeah. Well, if you guys get recognized, you guys are TV stars now, you probably get recognized when people come up to you and start talking to you about the Canucks, of course.
I got to be careful in beer league, Donnie. I make any mistake, everybody's going to know about it. You know, the refs are always saying, "I'm watching you, Reach."
Yeah. I remember those days. Yeah.
Donnie, you're the best. Always appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Always fun.
There is Don Taylor on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go.
We got this text from Ball Raj. He says, "I don't put a car flag yet. I don't want to jinx the Canucks. I'm full of buzz in my heart for the Canucks being in the playoffs." And somebody else texted in and said, "What can you do right now to show buzz? It's like hurry up and wait time." Unsigned text message. I kind of agree with that. It's like, to me, the playoff buzz, you can't really feel it until the playoffs begin. It's like day one of the playoffs. You get up, you leave your place. Like, you feel the buzz. It's different. Like, it has to be when the playoffs begin to really truly feel playoff buzz. I don't, like, we are in kind of waiting time, yes, right now. We're kind of waiting for the season to end, right?
We're all sipping on our Spros,
yeah,
you know, enjoying the sun. I heard on News 11:30 today that it's been 98 years since Vancouver was this warm at this time of year. It feels that long since the last playoff game at Rogers Arena.
It does feel like it's longer than the Titanic, yeah. It feels like it's been forever. I mean, it does, and I do think once we get, you know, to next week,
yeah,
that buzz will be far more palpable than it is right now. Like, I kind of do agree with that.
It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We'll keep you updated on what's going on with the out-of-town scoreboard. Our listeners are very much in tune with what's happening with the Nashville Predators, or what's not happening with the Nashville Predators, yeah, right now. But one other important bit of news, Caitlin Clark, now officially a member of the Indiana Fever. She goes first overall in the WNBA draft.
Yeah, a bigger lock than the Nashville Predators being the Canucks' opponent. Significantly bigger lock.
That one was a guarantee. Not so much with Nashville at this very moment. All right, more Canucks Central coming on Sports at 650. Back in on Canucks Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We're in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Lots of texts coming in to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Just go to the PNE to feel the playoff buzz. Playoff banners on every light post along Hastings Street by PNE. That's June from East Van. Another, Peter in Cloverdale, driving in Langley and just saw a huge Canucks flag in the bed of a truck. And the small window one, we are almost there. So, yes, a lot of buzz starting to grow around the lower mainland here.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I don't know how you measure those things, but I'd be surprised if the playoffs come around and there isn't like this palpable buzz in the city about,
yes,
you know, what's going to be happening with this team, right? Ratings are up pretty much on TV.
Yes.
They're up on, you know, radio. People are consuming more stuff now than they have in the past. Like, the interest is up. You go to Rogers Arena, I don't know if they announce sellouts every night or anything, but like, it's easily close to a sellout every,
yes,
night. You know, I know not every single a ticket bought doesn't mean button seat for every seat.
Not
as
always.
Well. Not always. But in terms of actual sales, like, the Canucks are like been at like 98%, 99% capacity for most part. Like, I don't know. To me, I feel the interest,
yes,
in the city in terms of buzz. To me, the buzz begins when the playoffs begin.
Our text box, you can feel the buzz. Feel the buzz. Feel the energy. It's clearly getting there, and you know, you get a one playoff win, and I'm sure it will definitely be even more felt once we get there. Whether it's Sunday, Monday, maybe even Tuesday. The other thing that's coming in quite a bit on our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox is, yeah, the Preds are losing. So you can bet on the Canucks having the Vegas Golden Knights as their first round playoff matchup. So the Predators down 2-0 in the first to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Pittsburgh has to win to maintain any semblance of playoff chances.
And yeah.
Even then, they still need help on the out-of-town scoreboard. Could have been 4-0. They had two goals called back, both for goaltender interference, essentially. Some contact with UC Saros in the crease. They got heavily outshot. I mean, look, the Predators don't really have anything to play for. They're pretty much they're locked into a wild card spot, and it's their final game of the season. They have nothing to play for. Penguins are playing game 7.
No, and especially with how you view Dallas and Vancouver.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, and if anything, would they be more afraid of Dallas? Would they prefer to play? I mean, I don't know. I don't think for them it would matter too much, Vancouver or Dallas. Vancouver's had their number this year.
Yep.
I don't know how they view either team in terms of which one is tougher.
Vancouver swept the season series.
And you're unlikely to ever really have home ice advantage at any point. Like, as a wild card team, you're not going to end up where you're facing, you know, a team below you at some point, you know, in the playoffs. So they literally have nothing to play for.
Yeah.
So in terms of having that muster that Pittsburgh has in desperation, they're not going to have it. And I know, you know, people have been talking about how, yes, now it means Vegas is going to catch them. I mean, Vegas, if Vegas wins out, they may end up playing Edmonton in the first round.
Yes.
And what needs to happen, too, is Vegas has to win both games for them to pass Nashville. LA would have to at least pick up, would have to pick up 3 out of 4 points for them to pass Nashville. So if one of them in out of four games loses in regulation, like only one team needs a regulation loss in four games. And if you look at the odds, that's why the odds are still heavily in favor of Vancouver playing Nashville in the first round. Now Vancouver still has to finish, as we mentioned, second in the conference, and they could still finish first if Dallas loses.
Yep.
So it's one of those things that it won't be determined yet officially for another couple of days, I don't think. Unless somehow, you know, the Preds. Well, even then, we don't know if the Canucks for sure will finish wild card.
Yeah.
Playing wild card too.
Because even if the Kings get to 99 points, they lose the tiebreaker with Nashville. And so if they finish as a wild card team, they'll end up playing the Dallas Stars. If Vegas wins both of their games, then they, in that scenario, they could move into third in the Pacific Division and end up with Edmonton in the first round. So there's a lot of scenarios that could still play out. The most probable one is the Canucks end up playing the Nashville Predators because there are multiple pathways for that to happen. And, you know, I know, yes, Vegas has Chicago and Anaheim, but I do need to remind people, like, these last couple of games of the NHL regular season with teams that are at the bottom basement of the standings and teams that are already locked into some kind of a playoff position, weird stuff can happen. And weird stuff will happen. So the expected result isn't always what ends up happening. Just to keep that in mind. So we'll see how it plays out. But yes, right now, Nashville not looking very good. Penguins looking great. They need to win in order to keep their playoff hopes alive. Detroit not so much, down 2-1 to the Montreal Canadiens.
The Red Wings are hilarious, man. Now, this game's not over, right?
Yeah.
But we're keeping an eye on it. We have the Jays game on here, and we have the Red Wings Habs game on.
Yes.
And they're doing a lot of stupid stuff. I'm like, you guys realize you have a playoff spot at stake here? Like, I don't understand what you guys are doing half the time.
No. Nobody can really figure out the Red Wings if we're fair about it. Islanders up 2-1 on the Devils. A win in any fashion for the Islanders clinches a playoff spot for them. And currently, Sats Washington Capitals lead the Boston Bruins 1-0. In the second period. No, it was not an Alex Ovechkin goal.
No, honestly, I don't even care anymore. He got 30 goals. That's all I cared about. The fact that he got through this year and still sits there with 30 at the end of the season.
It's remarkable.
It's fantastic. And it changes.
When he scored in Vancouver, it was his 19th of the season.
Yeah, he scored 12 goals in his final, like, what, 14 games or what, 15 games or whatever it is.
It's been absolutely mad.
But he was
the run he was on.
But we talked about it too. His shooting percentage was so low earlier this year, like so far below his career norms that even if he's regressed, he hasn't regressed that much, that it would correct to some degree, but it's really corrected the last little while. But I mean, the Capitals, to me, that final game between them and the New York Islanders.
Yep. Might not mean much now, right? Like if the Islanders clinch, It's not going to mean anything for them.
Would you rather? I guess you're. Would you rather play the Hurricanes, Rangers, or the Bruins in the first round?
Sounds like a first round exit for Bo Horvat, no matter what.
You're kind of like, yeah, I guess somebody passes us. Like if the Capitals pass them, for instance, which could happen. Like if the Islanders, but the Islanders would have to lose both these games here, right? So
they would have to lose, both.
Or at least to pick up only 1 point in the next four games.
Unlikely.
I mean, the Penguins' final game too. Like, they're playing the Islanders. Sorry.
Yeah. Penguins play the Islanders.
The Capitals do too, don't they? Or is the final game
against the Islanders? No.
No.
Islanders only have one game left after this one.
That's right.
So as far as, you know, what's going on there, Islanders up 2-1 on the Devils, and their final game of the season is against Pittsburgh. They may be home and cooled out by then, though.
Yeah, they play the Flyers. They have one game left. So the Flyers play the Capitals in the final game of the season tomorrow for both those teams.
Oh, boy. That one's going to be an interesting one. Flyers in tough. They need to win and get help on the scoreboard for them to finish in a postseason position.
Yeah, they're in a tough spot, and the West has been figured out as just playoff seeding at this point. But it's one of those things. Like I think we may have to wait another couple of days to know exactly who the Canucks definitely play.
Yeah, if Nashville were to come back and beat Pittsburgh tonight, it makes it even more likely that the Canucks finish against Nashville, or will end up playing Nashville. But some of the, you know, final seedings at the top have to be figured out, as in, can the Canucks still catch Dallas? Can the Canucks officially clinch the Pacific Division? None of those things have happened just yet.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, like, yeah, the Canucks, let's say Nashville does end up being wild card two.
Yeah.
The eighth seed. Well, the Canucks end up passing Dallas, and they play Nashville anyways. So there is a chance that happens as well, right? To your point, there are a lot of different ways the Canucks could end up facing the Preds.
So there's your probabilities. The Montreal Canadiens have just scored again. So Detroit now down 3-1.
I love this
one.
Eastern. This is such a stupid playoff race in the East.
It's not great, you know.
It's fantastic.
And the more you think about it, the more it's like, do you really want to have a play-in for these extra teams?
I do still.
You do?
Yeah, I still do. Because I think we're going to get to, we're at 32 teams right now.
Sounds like a Laker fan to me. Guy who's living off the play-in in the NBA.
You're not wrong. But I do think having an extra day, like even a one-off, like here's where I think it supports my argument. So do you think that a team that finishes eighth is entitled to a 7-game playoff series? Or finishes sixth, is seventh or eighth, is entitled to a first round playoff series of 7 games.
Yeah, sure, why not? That's how it's always been.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like the way they're playing, like all these bad teams down the stretch, are like, hey, do any of these teams deserve to be in? So if that's the standard, let's say it's a bad year.
Well, that's the benefit of finishing first in your conference generally, is that you, in theory, get a layup for the first round.
But yeah, but then you're getting a layup between four teams then, two other teams. So I think like even having a 1-game playoff between the 7 seed with the 9 seed and the 8 seed with the 10 seed, even a 1-game, I think it'd be fantastic. Have it so your home ice is finishing 7th or 8th, then you have a 1-game playoff.
Yeah.
To make the playoffs. I think that would be tremendous. And these teams, I don't think, deserve to get a 7-game series based on how they played down the stretch.
Yeah.
Like if any of these teams were serious, it'd be over by now.
Work a little harder.
Yeah. So I think if anything, this bad playoff race supports the fact that those poor playoff teams shouldn't be guaranteed anything.
And then you'll have owners getting upset that like, hey, how come these crappy teams get an extra home playoff game? That's kind of like a
I mean, you're never going to win the argument, I think, right? But my argument for having expanded playoffs, I think, is more playoff hockey. And I think having something that's a 1 or 2 game playoff before the playoffs begin is really fun. And I think that would create, like, I think just having a game 7 before the playoffs begin, like, what better way to start the playoffs than having an elimination game?
Yeah. It will come down to, like, rest versus rust.
But who cares?
We have seen wild card teams have success in the baseball playoffs. The play-in in the NBA is completely different. Like, those teams, when they eventually get in, they're already way behind the eight ball. They're way less good than the first seed is in whatever conference. So, generally,
we're going to have 34 teams soon.
Yeah.
And you're
when
not
Arizona gonna... comes back and Atlanta gets a team back?
Yeah, it's going to happen. It'll be Atlanta and Arizona. People are going to be so mad.
It's going to be the replay expansion segment of the NHL.
And then Winnipeg moves to Houston.
What are you talking about? That's not going to happen.
Within the next 10 years, yeah. What's more likely?
Winnipeg Jets Sports Entertainment is listening and very upset.
They're not a Rogers property. I can get away with it.
That's fair. Yeah, very realistic scenario that the NHL ends up in 34 teams in the next 5 years.
You know what? I'd say 5 to 10 is more likely than, like, say, 3 to 5.
My issue with this idea, though, that Arizona is going to just come back, Alex Morello doesn't seem like the right owner for that team.
It's probably not going to be him.
Yeah.
Like, I know they have it set up. So, like, he got his money. He's going to bail, man. It's over.
Yeah.
Like, I think this was all, like, placating him to save face, too, and kind of save his reputation in Arizona that, hey, I sold the team, but I wanted to bring him back. I'm going to be the guy that at least kept the NHL interested in Arizona, and when eventually they come back, somebody else will get it. Like, is he going to put the money back in that he just got? He just made a killing. He made a killing, running that franchise into the ground, not spending a penny above what he had to spend.
Literally nothing above what he had to spend.
So he's pocketing, what, at least $500-600 million?
Kept operating costs at a significant minimum.
And I think he was willing to get
like
sued.
Craig Morgan, and I think Forbes reported that they actually turned a profit last year.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, they just collected all the money, and they get revenue sharing, too, because they're lower team based on some of the stuff
that
happened.
Because they don't have the attendance and everything
like
that.
Yeah, exactly. So they're getting all this stuff. And that's why the rest of the league was like, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of this came down to probably quietly behind the scenes. I mean, I had heard that there were owners that weren't happy.
Of course.
With this scenario, because they're like, we're paying for this team to be propped up, and now they're taking all this money. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why should we prop this team up? And they were done with it. And playing in Mullet Arena was untenable.
So we stay out of court, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much. So I think a lot of this is face-saving. A lot of the stuff is BS. I just can't envision that he's going to be the guy. He's going to put his money back into something he just made a killing out of. There's
Doesn't
no
feel
way.
Like it.
And when you come back for an expansion team, the cost is going to be at least $1.5 billion or so. I know Alan Walsh today was saying $2 billion. You know he's Hronik's agent, so Hronik may be.
Well, they've already negotiated that it would be $1 billion.
Yeah.
Expansion fee.
Well, they're saying the next one could be $2 billion.
Yeah.
Right.
And how are you going to get Atlanta to pay more than what Arizona's paying to get back in?
We'll see.
It creates a few issues.
I think there'll be some outs and all that stuff.
But yes, Arizona is headed to Salt Lake City. We expect a news conference Thursday or Friday this week. The reporting has been, it's the story that has long not gone away and is finally coming to a head.
But it does not mean more Canadian teams.
No.
And, you know, we were kind of talking in the bullpen. Zach, the intern, brought up, like, Quebec. Yeah. Are they going to Quebec? It's like, no, they're not going to Quebec. It's not happening. They're
it's
not going
not
to
Quebec. It's just not going to happen. There's not enough corporate money in Quebec.
Yeah.
Even Winnipeg, you know, like, yeah, the whispers, we joked about it 5 minutes ago, but you wonder how much longer it's going to stay. As long as the Canadian dollar is where it is, it's tough for Canadian teams and small markets to be able to keep up with the American cities. And they've already got, like, Canadian teams are already at a bit of a disadvantage. More players want to play in certain U.S. cities. There's more states that have tax benefits that players would love to play in, and it's just easier for them to play in. So Canadian cities already at a competitive disadvantage to a certain level in the NHL. You're not going to keep going with that. And I don't know if they're ever really going to try and come up with some kind of a rule that levels the playing field, but maybe it should be in the works. The other thing that's kind of interesting about it, like, are we certain Salt Lake City is a slam dunk as a hockey market?
So,
like, they're going to be one of the smallest markets in the National Hockey League?
Well, they'll be bigger than Winnipeg.
I at least know that there is some, like, big tech kind of corporate money in Salt Lake that's probably going to help out.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes. I think the argument for Salt Lake, and we had Izzy on filling in for you a while back too, and he obviously he's an editor at, he's one of the bosses pretty much with The Athletic in terms of coverage, especially locally and stuff like that. And he was mentioning that some of the stuff that he's kind of heard and is there's a lot of corporate money, to your point, and they're very involved with local teams, right? And they're not afraid of spending a lot of money. And one thing that Smith and his group does really well is work with those connections, and they get lots of money coming in. So if they can be one of the top corporate profit teams in the NHL, it makes a huge difference. And if they can fill that arena, and one thing about Salt Lake City and about Utah in general when it comes to sports, when they buy into a team, they buy in. They go all in.
Yeah.
And they kind of have that vibe about their college teams too. You see how they are, but also any professional teams that come in on the lower levels, they're very passionate about their sports. And I can see that if you do it right and get those guys to buy in, it can be very successful. And it makes sense, but it's also one of those things where you're looking at it from 10 years from now, what's Salt Lake City going to look like? Is it going to be one of the fastest growing cities? And if that population does increase and it becomes a bigger player in North America, then it might make, you know, it might look like a really big bet, like a really good bet that turns out for them, but that's going to take some time.
They've their MLS team has operated on a budget, much like the Whitecaps operate on a budget. But Real Salt Lake has had some success with their MLS team while doing that. Caps having a little bit more success, but they've been a pretty good team, got a good setup. Obviously, the Jazz have had a little bit more success recently with Smith as their owner. I wonder, so you put a proper situation around this current Coyotes group. And I've heard somebody make the argument that they are in a similar spot to where Vegas was. Maybe even a better spot than where Vegas was when they first came into the league for the expansion draft. Remember, Vegas made all these trades, they collected all this draft capital, and then when they went to the expansion draft, they just made a killing, right? With all these players that they were able to get. They got a first-round pick for Marc-Andre Fleury, and they got Marc-Andre Fleury. They got William Karlsson from the Columbus Blue Jackets. They got Jonathan Marchessault and Riley Smith from the Florida Panthers. They did so many things really, really well and collected a bunch of draft capital while doing it. But if you look at Arizona, like, their cap sheet is mostly clear. They've got
tons of assets.
A bleep ton of draft
capital. They have 10 second-round picks the next 3 years.
It's insane the amount of draft capital they have to trade. There's no way, like, you can't – they almost, like, lose value because every team that you go, like, to talk to, like, understands, hey, you can't make all these picks.
No, you well, they do.
Like, you can make all the picks, but you're going to lose some of the players because you can't sign all the players that you're drafting.
And also, like, there's only so many players you can truly develop – over
at
a course of time,
yes.
Right? And it's if you're
Buffalo's
putting,
having that problem.
Exactly, right? And some guys fall between the cracks and your resources run thin a little bit. And that's not to say you don't want. Like, there is a point where you have too many guys.
And then when a guy hits 20, he really starts to become a diminishing asset.
Yeah, exactly. And there'll be guys that get drafted, to your point, that may not want to sign, especially college guys. Like, you know, I don't want to go to that logjam.
No, yeah.
You know, I just won't. So they're going to have to move some of those picks. You're right.
They have to move some of those picks. They have... currently going into next year, $41 million per cap friendly in projected cap space. So when I first thought of this question, I was like, could the Salt Lake City team win a playoff round within 3 years? And that seemed almost too easy. I think this is a team that could make the playoffs as soon as next year if they make the right moves in the offseason. I mean, you've got a pretty good stable, some pretty good players. You have a ton of draft capital to add to the team via trade, and you have a ton of cap space to add to the team in free agency. Like, there's a real possibility this Salt Lake City team is a playoff team as early as next year, Sat.
Absolutely. And, I mean, the amount of cap space they have, too. But now, the free agent market...
not the best.
It's not the best, but, I mean, they weren't that far off this year.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, they were. But, I mean, in terms of how they're playing hockey, and they played some pretty good hockey last year as well.
Yeah.
So I do think foundationally they have a lot of things in place. I don't think it's going to take a ton for them to be back in that discussion. And if you look at, you know, the Western Conference playoff race, it is a bit different than the East. Like, if you're going to make the playoffs in the West this year, you may need 100 points. Like, 99 points may be the cutoff to make the playoffs.
And that was the case in the East last year.
Yeah.
And it changed pretty quickly. So we'll see what happens. But the thing I would say as a knock against Salt Lake and a new ambitious owner, don't get overly ambitious. Don't let your ambition carry you into bad decisions. I think back to Terry Pegula when he took over the Buffalo Sabres and they signed Ville Leino to a really bad contract, and Christian Ehrhoff coming out of Vancouver, they signed him to, what, a 10-year deal or something crazy like that. So your ambition can get you into trouble sometimes, and you still got to manage your contracts pretty well in the National Hockey League. All right, final thing before we get to Kelly Rudy. If you started every hole at the Masters on the green, but like the hardest part of the green, would you be able to beat Scottie Scheffler?
No.
So if you started every hole on the green, you wouldn't be able to win the Masters.
Probably not.
So 11 under is what Scottie's number was.
Yeah.
So you'd have, I think, 277 shots. So you average that out. You have to, it's like 3.5 putts per hole.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. If with the pressure and knowing Scheffler, there's no way. There's no way, bro. There's no way.
You're starting on the green. He's starting from the tee. You're not winning the Masters.
No.
You can't 3-putt every hole.
No. There's no way. I can't. I know myself. And especially knowing Scheffler is like coming down, that's not happening. And it's not about me not believing in myself. Like, I don't have the irrational confidence that Josh Elliott Wolf has, for instance. Like, that guy thinks he can
complete
like a path.
But you're putting, even if it is on the hardest part of the green.
Yep. Yeah, it's not going to be that easy, man. Like, the greens aren't that easy to
nail.
No, they're
not.
They're not. And then knowing the pressure you have, imagine having one bad hole. You're like, now I got to get a couple birdies. Now I got to, like, 2-putt this.
Yes. Now I
got
to
1-putt one.
I 5-putted the last hole. I got to 2-putt this one now.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like, easy when you're like, oh, you have 3 putts to do it. But, like, all it takes is to mess up a couple holes. And it's like, are you going to sink? Like, how many long ones are you sinking?
The thing is, if you're playing mostly, like, horse tracks, like we do in our in our weekend warrior golf careers, you're not playing, like, the most pristine golf courses in the world, right?
Right.
They're not cut beautifully as right. a Masters green is. I mean, you watch it on television, it looks like a freaking carpet out there. It's crazy how manicured that place is and how fast those greens are. It's impossible. Like, some of the stuff you see on television and you imagine what it would feel like, what it would be like in real life, it's not a guarantee you would be able to 3-putt every hole, even if you are a half-decent putter.
Like, fast greens doesn't make it easier for amateurs.
No.
They're actually harder to handle.
Yes. You might putt things into the water.
Yeah.
You know? Anyways, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Kelly Rudy's coming up next on Canuck Central. Back in on Canuck Central, we're in the Kintech studio. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca. A lot to get to with our next guest. It is Kelly Rudy, Hockey Night in Canada's very own Kelly Rudy, joining us now on Canuck Central. How you doing, Kelly?
Well, Dan and Sat, I am in the best mood ever, and I'll tell you why. So Vancouver is my favorite city in the league to travel to, and because of the new job that I took 10 years ago at Sportsnet, I never come here for broadcast because it was always Shorty and Garrett. And mm-hmm. so I was never able to come here. This is my first time in 10 years back in this beautiful city as a broadcaster. And Rick Ball, my broadcast partner, has made dinner reservations in Yale Town, so I'm looking for that. And I've just been texting with everybody's good friend, Joey Kenward. And Joey, we love you, and keep up the fight, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all pulling for Joey. We had him on the on the show last week with Sat, and really, really good to hear some of the positive news that that Joey is continuing to be on an upward trajectory in his in his battle. It's great to have you here in Vancouver, and you're getting the weather to boot as well, Kelly. The perfect springtime weather, and you know it's been a while, but the Canucks. You know, usually around this time of year, we're getting for locker room clean out day and a lot of negative storylines around the team because they missed the playoffs yet again. But the story is just a complete 180 from where it was a year ago. I'm curious to just get your take on what you've seen out of Vancouver this year and how surprised you are that they are in the position they're in.
I'm not all that surprised. That's a really good lineup. They're getting the best out of everybody, but maybe the biggest reason why I'm not surprised is because my good friend Rick Tocchet is doing an amazing job along with the rest of his staff. Like, I've known Rick since 1987. We were teammates together on Team Canada in the Canada Cup, and then I was lucky enough to play in Los Angeles with Rick for a little while. And the reason I'm such a big fan is that not everybody can do this, but he's not afraid of conflict. And if you're coaching any pro sports team, you have to be willing to have conflict. You have to have uncomfortable conversations. And I've known Rick for so long, and he has no problem with that. Like, I wish I could share some of the stories that I have from the dressing room, but I can't, but they're just amazing. Like, he would definitely approach somebody if he didn't think they were doing the right thing for the team and let them know. And so, so I'm just the biggest fan. And as you can imagine, when he's in that position, then he has to go to somebody like JT Miller or whomever and say, here's what I think. I love you, but you've got to just change this one thing. You know, those are great conversations to have with the right tone. And, you know, other things, guys, Dan and Sat, I have to talk to Rick earlier this year about something. And he was telling me how, he loves the city, but he likes to go for walks around the seawall. And sometimes he'll take some of his players and they'll talk about life and do things that way. It's not all just hockey. It's about how people are doing. And so, I'm just so thrilled for him. And this team can go a long ways.
We're all hopeful for it. We haven't seen a long playoff run, not many playoff runs to begin with here. The past decades, we're all excited for it. And, you know, you mentioned talking now, and every coach goes about getting buy-in differently, but at the root of everything comes respect. The one thing that we talk about when it comes to talking oftentimes is he seems very comfortable in his own skin at all times. Like, in terms of the guys that you've been around and have had as coaches, how far does it go with guys when somebody's super comfortable with how they approach things day to day and don't seem to have any sort of agenda outside of what they're talking about with you?
Okay, the press conferences usually tell you a lot about the person. If they remain the same person and they don't sound as though they're trying to be too smart or you know, be the smartest guy in the room, then you'll have a connection with your players. But the other thing is you can't be timid. You've got to be a person that really believes in yourself. You've got to stand in front of a room, in this case for the Canucks, a room full of a lot of NHL stars, and you have to be assured of yourself and look like a general at the front of the room. And that, you can make mistakes, and you will along the way, but just make sure that you really believe in yourself, because then they can follow, right? If you're a guy that you really, I don't know this or this, and you know, you kind of lack in confidence, that rubs off on the guys, and they can see through that really quickly. And you know what? How cool is this? I'm standing in my hotel lobby and Wally Bono is just walking by right now. How great is that?
Yeah. What a legend.
Kelly Rudy. I'm getting a hug. Hang on.
Yeah.
Oh sure. Kelly and Wally just having a blast at the hotel. Love to see
Wally's
it.
A beauty as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And fantastic. I just saw he's getting celebrated. So, what a great life.
You're talking about how great Rick Tocchet is as a head coach, and there's one of the great coaches of the CFL history coming and walking through into the picture. It's incredible.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Kelly Rudy joining us here on Canuck Central. And, you know, we've seen Vancouver as like a high-flying team, and you know, this year they've talked so much about like buying into the defensive side, and you know, early in the season they did score a lot, but as the season's gone on, they haven't scored as much. And I know their results have been up and down recently, but really what impresses me, and I think should give Canucks fans some confidence going into the postseason here, Kelly, is just how well they play as a team defensively. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And that's why I think that they can go on a run, because in the playoffs, you aren't going to score a ton, and you have to be really willing to grind it out and maybe win a 3-2 double overtime game, because those are the ones that the season really is hanging in the balance of those ones that you just sort of gut it out, and it goes into extra periods, and you have to find a way to not only physically but mentally stay with it, because it's draining, right? And especially if it's maybe the fourth overtime game of a series, and you've got to make sure that everybody's dialed in, and you won't score, so you've got to make sure that you're not getting frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think overall with this team too, a lot of it comes down to their best players being their best players. And right now we seem to be in a real golden era of defensemen across the National Hockey League. And
yeah,
it seems like, you know, of course, Carroll Makar has kind of been on top of that mountain for a few years in terms of the best defenseman. But it seems like every year somebody enters the race a bit differently, right? It was, you know, Adam Fox not too long ago. Miro Heiskanen is an absolute monster. Roman Josi's incredible as well. It seems like we can have a spirited debate about who the defenseman is, and that list goes like six or seven deep. I know we've seen stuff like this in the past before, but this truly is an incredible era of Canucks of defensemen, and having a Canuck there for the first time is very special for this fan base as well.
Well, and I think you guys probably watched Hockey Night in Canada this past Saturday. I've taken the weekend off, and Kevin Bieksa was talking about Quinn Hughes at great length, and not only for the Norris, but for the Hart. And I would agree he's got to be in that conversation. I don't think he's going to win it because guys like Kucherov and McKinnon and McDavid and whomever else might be in that top group. But Quinn Hughes is just a special player, and I think all of us recognize the skating and the passing when he first arrived on the scene. And I remember making a joke, but not really. One of his first year or two in the league, I said something, but does he ever make a bad first pass? And it's very, very rare. Like, and if he does, he's probably under great duress. He's probably being, there's a heavy forecheck or something that he can't get away with his incredible skating. But that's how special that player is. And but also to your point, the defensemen in the NHL have never been more skilled. You know, they skate better than ever. They move the puck better than ever. And guys like Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes are leading the way.
A lot of our texters are already asking if you could give us a thought on Elias Lindholm. I know it hasn't always been the smoothest transition for him coming over from Calgary since the trade. He's got 10 points in 24 games. He was battling through an injury. But now that he's come back from that injury, Kelly, I think we're starting to see the best version of Elias Lindholm. Mm-hmm. And what Rick Tocchet has really honed in on when he's been asked about Lindholm is just how good of a defensive player he is. And I think that's, you know, people want the goals, but what Lindholm's biggest value is to this team right now seems to be what he brings as a shutdown center.
Okay, so in fairness, I am very, very biased. So I've known his dad. His dad played for a short amount of time with us in Los Angeles. And then over the years, I got to know Elias really well. And he's just a really great human being. And so that it starts there. And then when you talk about how he is on the ice, he's a tremendous hockey player. He is more gifted offensively than what you guys have seen. And he'll get there. Defensively, you never worry. And that's why going into the playoffs, he's going to be an invaluable player for Rick Tocchet. I also think there's a big adjustment. Like, you know, when you're a free agent coming up, all the trade talk all year long, and when you get to Vancouver, I can't speak for him. I'm not him, but I've gone through the same sort of situation getting traded. And it really can be disruptive. It's really hard on your life. It's on your family, all those changes. And I know that the transition hasn't been as well received, I guess, as a lot of Canuck fans were hoping that this would be seamless, but given time, and hopefully if he does sign back here, you will see a fantastic hockey player, and you'll really learn to appreciate everything that he does.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're all banking for in terms of the postseason and what he can bring to the team. And, you know, obviously the other thing the team really is banking on is Thatcher Demko coming back from an injury, and he's going to play against Calgary tomorrow, and we'll see if he plays that final game. But as a former goalie yourself at the highest level, coming back right before the playoffs and maybe having one or two games, would that be enough for you to get into rhythm again? And are there challenges you think that come with perhaps coming back this late in the season?
Well, there are plenty of challenges. I don't know what Rick and his coaching staff are thinking, but I would think it would be really important for Demko to play both games. You know, I just, after being out that long, there's a lot about timing and traffic and things that for a goaltender are really hard to simulate in practice. And maybe the number one thing, the speed is going to ramp up first game of the playoffs. It's so noticeable. You can't deny it. But most importantly, when you're a goalie and you miss time, what you can't sort of get used to is the traffic again in front of you, all the big bodies, all the, you know, the speed, everything like that. So I would personally I would have the discussion with him, and I'd hope that we could find a way to play in both games.
But before we let you go, a lot of our listeners would like to know what you've thought of Andre Kuzmenko since coming over to be with the Calgary Flames.
Well, I know that you guys, he didn't have the same sort of year that he did last year, but holy cow, is he on fire right now for the Flames. Like, he's a dynamic game changer in their lineup right now. I didn't know he was this talented. I watched him enough last year to recognize, you know, if you score 39 goals, you've got a lot going for you. But he is playing so well. You know, one of the driver of that whole line, though, is Kadri. And so maybe he's found a way to get the best out of Kuzmenko. And they chat a lot on the bench. It's just phenomenal. We have the camera on them every once in a while, and they continue to talk about positioning and all these different things about how to get the most out of each other. It's been really fun to watch.
Kelly, enjoy that dinner in Yale Town. If you need any pasta recommendations while you're going around the city the next couple of days, I got a whole list for you, all right?
Okay. Well, Dan and Sat, thank you very much.
There is one of the best. Kelly Rudy joining us here on Canuck Central.
Yeah, one of the best people, too. Honestly, yeah. Like he's an incredible human being, great person, and starts the whole thing off with a shout-out for Joey Cameron. I think that's very much on brand.
Yeah, you love to see it, 100% on that from Kelly Rudy, one of the best around and one of the best humans you'll ever find. So on his take on Elias Lindholm, and he mentioned, you know, it is very biased. He's got a long-standing relationship with Elias and his father, even going back to his days with the Los Angeles Kings. But it's kind of what we can already see with Lindholm. And we've heard the coach talk about the immense defensive acumen that he has. The only thing that's missing out of his game right now is a little bit more of the offensive pop. Like, I know people want to see more of the offense, but if he keeps playing like the way that he has in these last two games since coming back from injury, we'll see the offense.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and I'm not going to sit here and say you
it's
don't
a much
need
better
offense.
Player than the one that went, you know, that was shut down for a couple of weeks there.
Absolutely, far better player than what we've seen, and if he can sustain it, it's going to be really important. But the way I gauge success for this team is going to be going far in the playoffs.
Yeah,
and if he can play a big role winning his matchups that allows this team to go on a deep run. Not to say I don't care about the production at all. Of course, you want to see some level of bottom line, but that's to me secondary. Given the role, right? If he was playing with Pettersson and they wanted to go with Bluger, Garland, and Joshua as a third line, they felt like Pettersson and Lindholm would hit it off, and they would have hit it off, and they had chemistry, I would be judging them on points because their job is to play together and play at a high level. His job now is to be on the third line, so-called third line, right?
Yeah.
But it's a matchup line. Defensive line, tough situation line. What do you judge that line on? Winning its matchups.
Yes.
So to me, I'm gonna gauge success for him, how he wins his matchups. And if that can help the team go far in the playoffs, he's going to be worth it. And to me, the points are really secondary in the discussion.
This text, re-sign Lindholm. it's going to be very difficult to re-sign Lindholm. There's a very real chance he's still able to get upwards of $50 million in unrestricted free agency this summer. Even if he doesn't, you know, score a bunch of goals here from now until whenever the Canucks season is over. But it's, you know, it's still going to be very difficult to sign Elias Lindholm. For as much as, you know, there's an idea, hey, you can get him at a discount now that he's been hurt and he hasn't been scoring this year. I still think that, like, this guy's getting probably around $50 million in free agency this summer.
He probably is. I mean, I looked at it as we discussed it before, and Kadri was coming off a different season, but he was a bit older. He still got 7x7.
Yeah.
Like, I think something along those lines is probably still out there for him. So what is a discount to you? And I think if people think he would sign for 5x5 or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's in the cards.
Like 6x6 would probably be a discount.
Probably. And
like,
we'll see.
It would be a discount on what he could get on the open market.
Yeah.
And I still think that's something that, not the Canucks shouldn't do, but it would be hard for the Canucks to do.
Yeah. And if you actually look at, like, Vinny Trocheck, for instance, got that contract. It was like 43 some million. And he didn't have the same profile defensively, but offensively, he had a couple of good seasons. But even this year, with all the struggles that, you know, Elias Lindholm has had, he's still sitting there with 42 points on the season right now.
Yeah.
And he's played 63 games.
still pretty good numbers.
Like, it's not great, but I'm saying it's not like he's had the, you know, he had 60 points last year, for instance, yeah. right? He had 80 the year before. So even if it's a down year, he's still at the above half a point per game kind of rate. The goal scoring's down, but had people know his wrist injury, that's going to bounce back a little bit. So I don't think his market is going to depress to the level where it's going to be this massive discount you're talking about, you know, even 5x5 or something. Like, it's going to be above $6 million on a long-term deal.
And I think a lot of smart teams still view Lindholm as a guy that can really help them, i.e. maybe the Boston Bruins. Think that they can get Lindholm in. He would be their first-line center, play with David Pastrnak, and how would that look like? Would probably look pretty good. So, you know, I think there'd still be a lot of competition for Lindholm. Bottom line is, you got to see him start playing his best hockey, and he's getting closer to that with the way that he's played these last couple of games. The other takeaway from our conversation with Kelly Rudy, Thatcher should play. As a former goalie, I would want to play both of those games.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would guess, I don't know Thatcher specifically. I don't know exactly how he feels about this. He held his cards a little bit close to the vest. He's excited to get back tomorrow. Doesn't know if he's going to play both games, but I just imagine the competitor in him wants to play both games.
Yeah, and from a rhythm standpoint, I was not an NHL goalie, right?
The rhythm
I
thing
think
is
you want more than a game.
The rhythm thing is interesting, though, because let's say they do play Nashville.
Right.
Saros will not have played a game for 8 days
right.
going into the series. Right,
so Demko would have had more games in the last 8 days than UC Saros. if he played a single game,
he would have more rhythm than UC Saros going into that series.
Technically, from that standpoint, yeah. I just mean in terms of like your rhythm. By that, I mean like a guy coming back,
yeah,
just kind of feeling right again. And maybe all it takes is the first game. The thing that to me is different than the start of the season is that you're ramping up in this from the entire offseason through training camp, through the preseason to the regular season.
Yeah.
And yes, like he's kind of ramping up, but he's not ramping up in terms of coming back from 100% clean health, where you've taken some time off in the summer, you've got to 100% health, and now you're feeling rejuvenated, and now you're getting back to playing hockey. Like, he's recovering from an injury. He's going through rehab to get better. And then he's, you know, going through what he's going through here, plays a single game, goes to the playoffs. Like, to me, that's not the same environment as getting ready in the preseason. So when we point to how good he was to begin the year after, you know, a short period of time, so to speak, I don't think it's very similar to the situation he's going through right now. And I'm not betting against him. Like, I still listen to what Woodley and guys say. Even in practice, he looks very good already. He looks like he's back to his old self and all those things, very positive. But I still think it's a question mark until you see him. Like, you know, like, and playing a single game, I would be a little concerned about, is he going to find his top form early in a series in the playoffs?
And Thursday, the reality is Thursday might very well be basically just an exhibition game of sorts between the Canucks and Winnipeg Jets.
And the question on that would be, is an environment like a preseason environment even
conducive enough in
that situation? Like, I don't know. These are questions that I think people that obviously have more expertise in the goalie side of things. So to me, goaltending has changed so much that, and even the coaching staffs now across the league say they listen to their goalie guys. Talkett says they have ideas, but it's really what Ian Clark says.
Yeah. And, well, the goalie guys just know so much more.
Yeah. Like, it's where it's like the biggest discrepancy in terms of the intricacies and understanding the position.
The science of the position is just so much more different than what's happening outside of the goalie's crease. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. We're going to have a lot to get to tomorrow on Canuck Central. We'll have a full program, of course, and then we'll also have the Canucks and Calgary Flames for you. Pregame starting at 6, and I believe pregame at 6:30 as well on Sportsnet Pacific here for Canucks Central. It's the final game of the season at home until the playoffs, of course. For once, the Canucks aren't getting the golf clubs out at this time of year. Tomorrow is Fan Appreciation Night, and then they'll close up the season on Thursday against the Winnipeg Jets. We keep getting texts. They aren't playing Nashville. We'll have to see how it plays out. Nashville has now come back. It is 3-2.
Heading into the third,
so some things to watch as we conclude here on the night. 3-2 Penguins over the Preds heading into the final 20 minutes of play. If the Predators win that game, they will clinch the first wild card and then have an even higher probability of facing the Vancouver Canucks in the first round than they already do. Also, viewing tonight, 6:30 start, Oilers and San Jose Sharks. Oilers need to win in order to keep their Pacific Division hopes alive. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. You've been listening to Canuck Central.